Dude.
Oh,
Richard.
dude. Tarun and Richard in the house.
Dude, I am so excited to even see you, man.
Yeah, this is great, man. It's fun little chat in the morning. I got some Indian sweets here that I'm eating for our meeting here.
Dude, meeting. First of all,
It's not a meeting, I mean.
Before we start, I just want to introduce you to I have a few people who actually watch this, but Richard is hilarious comic filmmaker. And man, if you're not aware of Richard, you got to go watch his stuff. Because, dude, I was watching your stuff before I even met you. Like, but you made a web series called
Night of the Living Karens.
I watched all the episodes last night on TikTok. And you're a talented filmmaker, but I watched you. I became aware of you from your stand-up. And I was like, man, this guy is so funny, like naturally funny.
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
When did we first meet?
You know what? I met you. The very first time was I saw you at Venice Underground in at the townhouse. It was a Bronson's show, and we were both on the same lineup. We may have just met briefly that night, but that's the first time I remember seeing you.
Was I doing Bobby Kahn back then at the show or something?
Yes. Yes,
Right.
sir. I remember that very vividly.
Must have been like, what's this hack Indian guy doing on stage?
I mean, I think it's dude, I think it's the Indian superpower to be able to do the Indian accent on stage. Like, it's so funny. And we're the only people that can get away with it. Like, we gotta milk it.
But you don't really do it that much. Dude, your act, what I loved about your act though, because when I watched it, it's like you have this natural, like I think I told it to your face, like it's the essence of being funny and the jokes are over it. And you have that like
Thank you.
very quick, which I mean you've been doing comedy over a decade, right? But
Yeah.
I feel like I watched your earlier stuff. I went through your TikTok, your earlier, I don't know when you first started the TikToks, but your earlier early stand-up, and you have that built
Oh,
into you.
thanks. Yeah, I feel it was funny because I started originally, like, my dreams were like, I'm gonna be a rock star. And so you can see I have my guitar back there. I've had that since I was 18. I just started playing, and like all my friends, they would like come watch me play at open mics, and they'd listen to my songs, and they'd be like, yeah, the songs are all right. They're like, but you're kind of funny. And so
Yeah.
I was like, so people have been telling me that I'm like funny or have some sort of funny essence for a long time. So I was like, all right, let's go. Let's give it a shot, you know?
And you were a programmer, right? For?
Yeah. Oh my God. So I used to so back in college there was okay, I have a computer science degree. I worked at various startups, and I worked at Yahoo as a Yahoo Mail engineer. But I only did that because I thought comedy would be impossible. And it wasn't until like 10 years ago that I was like, okay, I have to give this a shot.
So, were you like the funny guy in the office, essentially?
Yeah, but like, dude, the thing is, like, yeah, I'm not like a class clown or like I'm funny, but unintentionally. Like, and I was more of like a weird energy. Like the way I would just have anger bursts, and I would just yell at all of my coworkers. So that was more what I was bringing to the table.
It's hilarious because even your because now you're posting more crowd work stuff and I see your crowd work stuff
Yeah.
and you're good at the audience interaction. But what I liked about your act though, man, because I'm not afraid to trash people, but like you don't do like generic like Indian stuff. Like I feel like you would be even if you weren't Indian, I feel like you would still rise. So I mean, I'm
Yeah.
putting my chips behind you, man. I think you
Hell
got
yeah.
a great future in terms of. I mean, you're already building a huge fan base.
Yeah, and the thing is, so I think it's like when I first started, I was leaning on the Indian crutch. Then I started being like, oh, I'm not gonna do any Indian material. I just started writing regular material, being a regular comedian, and now I'm back to where, like, no, I'm Indian, like, and I want to talk about it. So I think I'm talking about it now, not as a crutch, but like as in, like, I like being Indian and I want to talk about it.
Do you feel like it serves you in any way, or like right now with the diversity thing? Because I feel like it's bigger in the acting world, but I don't know if it carries over in the stand-up world.
I don't think so. Well, I mean, there's definitely Indian people that want to see themselves represented in stand-up comedy. So, and I have a bunch of Indian fans. So there's that aspect. So it helps a little, but there's definitely no like there's no gatekeeper being like, we need an Indian person. There's none of that.
Give me your opinion on this, because I feel like I don't make this about being Indian, but I feel like the barometer for like Desi people, like they just want to see someone do comedy on stage versus like comedy fans. Like there's more of like you're kind of nuancing comedy, but Indians, like, oh my God, he's Indian, I'll support this guy just because he's Indian, which is why, without naming names, a lot of guys have mass appeal. They're not super funny, but they can, they're brown.
Yeah. No, I definitely get a lot of people being like, wow, it's so cool to see a brown person on stage like doing this. Like it's so cool. So I do think there is that. I mean, that's how it works in anything. That's how it works in sports. You're like, you just root for your home team just because it's your home team. But I do think it's getting to the point now where it's like people are not gonna. I think there's enough Indian comedians now where you can find one that you like relate to more than the other.
I mentioned his specials. Did I watch your special and I texted you or I messaged you from Nice and Filthy? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
He has this great special. It's like it's a half hour, right? That you self-produced on your own. Is an hour?
Nice and Filthy is about an hour,
Oh,
and
okay.
it's a compilation of 2 years of footage from a show I used to produce in San Francisco. So every single joke is filmed at the same venue, and it's for me, it's so cool because I see my progression over 2 years, and it's on that same stage, and it's the first show I ever produced. So, and I just love it.
And I'm sorry, I'm like getting all my facts wrong about your stuff, but what
All
I
good.
figured out why I liked it because you have this fearlessness, which I think I told you to your face. You tap into like this, like just that what every Indian guy like feels like that sexual like frustration with just
Yeah.
and you say it and it's like there's no filter, which is how I am. I have no filter, but you say that. Through your comedy and you like filter through this lens. And that's why I love your kind of snarky stuff.
Yeah.
Was that
Yeah, thank you.
conscious?
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that about myself, where like I definitely consider myself someone who overshares, and but I think it's fine. Like I think I've gotten to the point where like my ego is out the door, and if I have a thought, I'm just gonna give it to you completely raw, and just because I want to see like does this connect with other people. But it does make some people uncomfortable to be like, wow, this guy like really just says the like the most
Oh
like
my God.
intimate details, you know?
It's great. And I think that's why I was watching 9/11 Carrots and I laughed because you also have that in your films. I'm sure was that a collaboration with somebody else? Was that just you?
Yeah, Night of Living Karens I did with my friend Zach Chapeloni.
But you can see like your lines from your stand-up, in like when the dog was like licking you, he's like, he's attacking me. It was like this dog. But
Yeah. I like that character because that character is part of like who I am. Like it's my like it's just unfiltered. I have a lot of anger inside, and it's always good to play a character that I can use as a filter to get that out. And I think for I mean, you've experienced as well. Like, good acting is when you can like use something that you really feel and then put it into the character, and it becomes this catharsis.
sure. And I was most impressed because you're a good filmmaker. Like
Thank
you,
you.
I'm watching like your shots and the way you like drop in music and like sound effects. And I was like, I was really impressed because, and this is my problem. Like I could easily like just be like, oh, I'm just not gonna do stand up. I'm not gonna do this. But you're very focused on your stand up. But I was like, this guy could easily, be a comic actor, filmmaker, which takes an inordinate amount of time to do that. So was that like a conscious decision of like saying, hey, I'm gonna put this aside and just do stand up?
No, it's just because producing a film or a series just takes so much effort and time for so little. But no, it's definitely something that I want to do more of because I love sitting down with an hour of footage and just cutting out the best parts and assembling it together and doing like sound design also. Like I love like interesting sound effects that like accentuate moments. Like I'll spend an hour listening to different kinds of like horror noises to be like, oh, which one really sets the tone here.
I could see that, like you had the piano like notes on the effects, but you had these little, and then you'd have like the review, you'd do like a lot of the comedy stuff, like you'd like reveal the thing after, you'd have to, you hear like the someone say the dialogue and then cut, and I was like, man, this guy's like a good filmmaker.
Thank you. Yeah, I well, yeah, I think that's such a basic little trick that really goes a long way where it's called an L cut.
Right.
So yeah, you hear the person talk, then you cut to them. And it can go the other way too, where you cut to them and then you hear them talk. Like, so they both create like a different kind of vibe.
Which brings me to I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you've really like just captured like the, I guess, the essence of 2023 of being, entrepreneur. You're capitalizing a technology, like you're using
Yeah.
it well. And I'm wondering if that was something which you understood early on, like, because I have a hard time. I feel like I'm old, like, but I feel like you're just on it.
Yeah, I think whenever I see an opportunity, I just go for it. And I'm kind of like a leave no stone unturned kind of guy, where it's like I would not feel okay with myself if I didn't try to get like a huge TikTok following. Like it would just be, I couldn't tell everyone that, hey, I tried to make it an entertainment and I tried as hard as I could. I wouldn't feel okay having any regrets with that. So when I saw TikTok, I was like, okay, here's an opportunity. Let's just see. Yeah, it actually created an interesting format for me because the videos were only 1 minute long, but I wanted to make a series, so I had to make 1 minute episodes, and that was like such an interesting limitation that actually made the series better, which was kind of interesting.
Well, also just the subject matter, like the Karen thing was just a huge, that whole progressive, like hitting that note.
Yeah.
Like I feel like you were one of the early guys to like really capitalize on, making content or about it.
Yeah, and I'm looking for, what's the next thing in the zeitgeist that I want to capitalize on. But yeah, I think that was so topical. It's you want to create something that's topical but also simple, and you don't want to beat the audience over the head with something that's like has too much of a message. So whenever I find that sweet spot, that's the kind of work that I love the most. Like
Yeah, good.
I was just gonna, oh yeah, I mean, I was just gonna say that like the worst kind of performer is the one that you're like, oh, it's like this guy's got a message. You know what I mean? Like I hate
Yeah, I know, me too.
that.
I know the worst is like when they have like applause breaks, they don't even have any jokes, but it's like an applause at the end. Like Norm Macdonald say, why are we, this isn't comedy, it's like a pep rally or something.
Yeah, I mean, go to a pep rally. It's fine. Just don't do it at a comedy club.
Yeah, because I watched your web series. By the way, Richard has like 1.4 million or something on TikTok and another huge following on Instagram. But like I watched that and I was like, this is a guy, and I know times have changed. You know those comics who like filmed a series on their own and they sent it to Comedy Central or whatever. I was like, this Richard could easily be in his own series. Like make a whole show and send it. And yeah, I could see you like as a lead as like a show, because you're also a pretty good actor as well, like playing that character. Like it's,
Thank you, ma'am.
and it's connected to your stand-up character too, which is even better.
That's interesting for me because I actually didn't make that connection. Do you think the way I do stand up is like, because the
Yes.
character is like a bitchy, angry character?
Well, you can tell you're acting, but you can that subtle layer is beneath it, like when you're, when you're yelling about the you parked over the line and stuff from the
Oh,
and you're
yeah.
yelling, like, yes, definitely. It's almost like this guy's like in on the joke himself, but it's funny as hell.
Yeah, I think I just want I think that is kind of my character is like I'm so angry, but it's harmless. And it's kind of like you're like looking at like an angry puppy, I think maybe.
Well, let me bleed this in your stand-up a little bit, because you've done like special. You did a special for Dry Bar. For people that don't know, Dry Bar is this squeaky clean comedy thing, filmed out of Utah. They make a shit ton of money, and they can only do it. It's hard to get on because you got to be clean. And I know we talked about Richard's dirty stuff, but so you can play to like just generic white people in Utah. Like, how is that transition from like who you are to that? Just for my audience.
I mean, I think I think the limitations are actually fun. So it's like if you perform at a comedy club, like I noticed that like my comedy starts adapting to whatever audience I play for. So if I'm doing all comedy clubs, like my comedy gets filthy. And it's great for me to have the balance to be like, go play for the Dry Bar crowd. So the Dry Bar crowd, it's filmed in Provo, Utah. It's a lot of people that went to like Brigham Young. A lot of Mormons in the audience. Has to be squeaky clean, so clean that you can't even say, "Oh my God," "Oh my gosh" is okay, but frowned upon. So for me, it was kind of interesting. Like it was like panning all my material to see, like, okay, I have, 2 hours, and what can I actually do on this? And I barely got to 25 minutes,
Oh,
and
that's funny. That's funny. I
yeah,
wouldn't
and I had to
expect that.
like. I was tweaking some of my material in the hotel room on the day of the taping, being like, man, how am I going to get this joke to be clean? Can I like, and I did one punchline completely new on the taping, which was, so nerve-wracking.
Did you do that by yourself, or did they have the stack comics like half hour, 25, 25, 25 for the same audience?
Yeah, they do. They tape three comedians in a night, two shows. So yeah, we all do 25, 25, 25. And they were so nice to me. They gave me the middle spot.
Oh,
So it
great.
was, yeah, it was really nice.
Did you feel like your second show was tighter? It's because you had that first show to warm up.
The second, sh I think the we used about half of the material from, I think we used most of the material from the first show and like a quarter of the material from the second show. So the first show was actually better for me.
Okay. And how does that connect to performing for like, because we were talking and you make money sometimes from these total desi on, you fly out and do these Indian shows. Like, how does that relate to that on? Because I did that in my, man, the first decade of comedy and I hated it. Like, how do you do in front of those audiences?
I've only recently realized that if you play for an all desi audience, it's got to be mostly crowd work. They're because usually an Indian event, like I've performed at engagement parties. I did one for the Lawyers Association of Dallas, South Asian Lawyers Association of Dallas.
Oh, it's funny.
Yeah, and I do the material, they're kind of laughing, and then but the minute you just talk to somebody. What's your name? Oh, who's this? Where's your wife? Oh, why is she at that table? You're here. She's at that table.
This guy's a genius.
How does he do it? It's like, but that's just what they want. They don't, I think I don't know if it's just like Indian audiences are newer to stand up, but they love the crowd work, especially even when I went to India. It was like you would not believe, like you do crowd work and people are standing in the audience and clapping. They're like running up and down the aisles. Like it was, and then you do material and everyone's just looking at you blank in the face.
Dude, I'm sorry, but I watched like these guys from India. People were telling me to come to India like 10 years ago or 15 years ago. I said, I'm not doing comedy. This is ridiculous. And then I started seeing the influx. Man, some of those comics are terrible. I know they're really popular, but like I even translated into English, I'm like, these jokes are awful. So, but then I'm like, maybe it's a cultural thing. So I wonder how people actually do. Have you performed actually in India?
I did back in February 2016, I went to Delhi, Bangalore, and Mumbai, and I did a lot of I did like a lot of shows, like a lot of like 10 to 20 minute spots. I did like 30 of those, and so I really got like a real a good idea of what the Indian audience was like. Hey, here's the thing, like I think my job as a comedian is just to entertain whoever's in front of me. Like at the end of, I could sit here at home and be like, I'm an artist, but if people pay money, you have to make them laugh. So, I felt like, yeah, the stand-up, I wasn't so nuanced like I am in America if I'm playing some like alt comedy room, but audiences were having fun, and it was a different muscle, and I had to tweak my jokes a lot to get them to work in India. And when I came back to the US, the tweaked versions were actually doing better than the old versions.
And I think that's why I think you're really strong because, I mean, just talking to you, you've done every, it sounds like you're very versatile, like a Swiss Army knife from like Utah to India to Indian audiences here, the LA audiences. I mean, that's going to make you strong in general.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Yeah, at first when I started doing audiences outside of California, I was like, oh man, road audiences are so dumb, or like, and then I started realizing that it was just my own ego. And I was like, because I used to think that if you do well in too many rooms, I thought that meant you're too broad. And but then I started realizing that, like, no, that just means if you do well in more rooms, that just means you're able to communicate what you're saying to all sorts of different types of people. So you're actually strengthening your articulation.
It's that's interesting. I don't really play to outside of Florida and California, but it's you have to adapt for sure. You know who said that? Well, you just said Jay Leno. Like Jay Leno said that, he goes, it's a job at the end of the day. You gotta do the job, otherwise what are you doing?
Do the job. Yeah. I mean, I have plenty of jokes which are, just for me. But like at the end of the day, stand-up comedy, it's you and the audience, and it's whatever happens with that interaction. So it's like you can't really ever get too like precious about your material. Like it's got people gotta laugh.
Miss a question. I mean, did girls like throw themselves at you like after the shows in India, or was it were you like Bill Hicks and like India?
That would have been awesome. I you know what, actually it I've made like a recent transition in my comedy, where my comedy used to be like very like, oh, I'm such a loser and stuff like that, and I think that really kept me from getting like panties thrown at me on stage for a long time, but so I actually made a very like I made like a real decision to just stop doing anything that's like too self-deprecating. And now much better. Like now I'm actually getting women coming up to me being like just giving me their number and stuff like that. And that was such a like it was such an important thing I did for myself, because I just decided like I'm not going to talk shit about myself on stage anymore. Like it might be funny, but like the lasting effects. Like if you say something about yourself, eventually your brain just processes it. So no more of that. Like no more of that.
That's
And
great.
it,
No, I love that. I love
yeah.
that. I think it's also that was a line from the movie Funny People, Adam Sandler. Like that was actually a line. He goes, you come across like a loser. People are gonna think you're a loser. So, but I never thought you came across like that. But I do. I'm very conscious about that too now. Not just for chicks or girls after the show, but just my own mental psyche. Because otherwise, you do too many shows. You're like, man, what am I doing? I'm in this hotel room. And you're like, I am a loser. The fucking and I'm sitting here in Buffalo by myself.
Yeah, no, people don't want loser comedy anymore. It's definitely funny, it has a place. Self-deprecation is great, but what people want now is they want to see somebody, because they see themselves reflected in you. So, like Kanye West said it best. He said, if you're a fan of me, you're a fan of yourself. So, you know, like I try to, you know, I want, I think I'm trying to put that mentality forward. Like if you see me on stage getting laughs and like I talk about like, you know, all these like fun experiences I'm having, I think people can look at that and be like, man, I see myself in that. Like I'm gonna do all that. And I think, you know, I don't know. Self-deprecating still has a place, but I think, you know, we're seeing, you just want to be like, you want to be more, you want confidence, I think, is going further these days.
Right, especially as you find your voice, like you don't need to pander to the audience. Like you can, you know, double down on who you are, and you know, the audience will connect and go with you.
Yeah, I think and honestly, I think it's just more about truth. Like, you know, like I'm not a loser. You know what I mean? And you're not a loser. Like it's so we just let's, you know, so it's like it's disingenuous if you go like, oh, I'm texting this girl and she's not texting me back. It's just like the audience is gonna like sense that disconnect on some level.
Dude, one of the my biggest pet peeves of comedy is when I see something that's not authentic. You can just tell when someone's not authentic, or they try to create like a fake character, and which we all do. I get that in comedy, but and it's frustrating to watch that as a comic, which I can't even watch comedy anymore, to be honest with you, like stand up. But unless it's like, you know, really, unless like they're really like centered who they are as people, which takes, you know, a long time to find.
Yeah, I actually here's the thing. I do like to watch stand up because I really like seeing what new people are doing because it's so because comics that are new, like we're talking, you know, maybe 1 year, 2 years. Like they're doing something completely from a raw, authentic place. And after you do comedy for more than a decade, you start losing touch with that authentic place. And it's always good to see like a new comic trying because there's no filter. It's the same way like watching a baby play or something like that. You know, you get
Sure.
in touch with like discovering life for the first time. So I still do watch stand up for that reason.
That's great. How do you feel about like this? Because you know, you actually inspired me. Actually, I upgrade all my camera stuff because
Awesome.
like you're like, do you feel like the state of comedy now versus back then? I think I know what you're gonna say, but do you think if this is a better time for comedy or like a worse time in terms of just the, you know, anybody can make it.
You know, that's actually a really interesting question because I can't tell if it's better or worse. We are slaves to the algorithm right now. And I think it's just so I think it's so interesting because like you and me, we can see how it works, but most people don't. So all the algorithm does for any of these platforms is they just see, does the person who we serve this video to, do they watch it to the end? Because attention is the biggest commodity in the world right now. So if a video commands attention, meaning you watch it to the end, they go, great video. Give that to another person and then watch it to the end, give it to another person. So if you look at people like, okay, who's the biggest comic right now? Matt Rife. Okay. Hot guy telling competent jokes. All these women are going to watch it start to finish, right? So the algorithm keeps on serving it to more and more people. And so it just keeps on going. If you go to his shows, you just, when he goes on stage, you just hear a very high-pitched, shrill scream. So you know who the algorithm has given his videos to, and you know who's watching it. So it's just so interesting to me when people don't understand like why certain people are becoming famous now. But that's the problem with this time is that you have to make that algorithm happy if you want to blow up on social media. So I don't know if it's a great thing, because it's gonna. You know, it's gonna make you cater to that. Whereas back in the day, like, you know, if what's better, catering to the algorithm or catering to some gatekeeper at a comedy club? You know, like it's just changed. So I don't know that like it's gotten any. I think it's the same. I think it's just, you know, choose your evil.
That's a great comedy special name, Slave to the Algorithm. Great. I mean, look, it's I feel like you're benefiting from it because at least you get to you know, find an audience. And you know, that's the one thing that's frustrating about when I do comedy. I'm like, man, am I even like appealing to people? Like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, oh no, it's the algorithm, because sometimes clips will blow up, sometimes they won't, you know, but I think it's your consistency of putting it out there.
And it's just so funny. It's like, look, if 1,000 people posted a video today, then the algorithm is going to be like, okay, we need to choose one of these to serve up. So, you might be part of some like random generated, lottery. And so it's like, so I do think consistency, I think you got to be consistent just so the algorithm can pick you once in a while.
Right. I also want to get to Richard. You're a guy who understands business well. You have a great show in San Fran, which I want to plug. It's called The Setup. I've never done it, but like I've heard great things. You have a sister show here in LA. Was
Yeah.
that also part of like the battle plan going into comedy? Like I'm going to create my own space.
Yeah. Yeah, I always say like stand-up comedy is the most difficult career in the entire world, because not only do you have to work out all the time, but you also have to build the gym. So it's like, I was just like, okay, I need to get good in a place where I can just go there all the time, and I can, and there's no stakes also. Like if you perform at some comedy club, you have to do well, and otherwise they don't ask you back. So, but then you don't get better because you just stay in these like rigid frameworks. So yeah, I'm definitely building my own show with my my good buddy Abhay Nadkarni. Him and I, we just built this thing in San Francisco, just because we were like, we need to just get great at comedy, and we need to do it in a no stakes environment. Yeah,
Yeah,
so it's
can
called Setup. We have shows in San Francisco and Los Angeles, www.setupcomedy.com.
Yeah, but you sell t-shirts too, right? You sell merchandise. Is that out
We do
yet?
have some merch, yeah.
Yeah, you got to check out that show. I mean, I'm next time I'm in San Fran, even if I'm not on it, I got to go check it out because I've heard it's like the seller of like San Fran. Like you guys pack it in and just it's great,
Yeah,
dude. I
well,
think Indian gene in you.
I mean, when next time you're in San Francisco, let us know, and you can come do a spot.
Which leads me out of all the things you've done, like what are you most proud of? Because I feel like you already have this. You've done a lot of things that comics 20 years in haven't done, 20, 30 years in.
Yeah, I mean, I think just sticking with this long enough, just doing this for so long, I think is something I'm proud of, because I always knew, like, starting, that this is a marathon that's going to be extremely difficult. And every year that I'm in it, I'm like, whoa, like, I can't believe I did another year of this. Like, because it's an uphill battle, because I used to be a computer programmer. So I'm always like thinking about like, whoa, I gave up like a high paying tech career to like pursue my art, which is like, most people don't do that. So I think just the fortitude of having that decision already, to me, that's like, already that's probably my biggest win. In terms of like, specific things, yeah, I don't know. I think it's like, I think some of the jokes I've written that where I've really found the right angle to do them, I'm just so proud of. Like, I have one joke now that makes me very happy, where I talk about how I don't care about politics. Like I'm a comedian, I just have to make people laugh. So my politics are the same as the owner of the comedy club where I'm performing. And then it goes on, but I'm so proud of that joke, because usually you're playing, people have such strong feelings about politics. And then I was able to come in and be like, I don't care about any of that. Like, I just cater. Like, you want to believe something stupid? I'm on board with you. And I think it just like diffused that like political weird tension that's always there. So
Yeah.
yeah, I think just getting to this level where like I'm finally being able to write the kind of where my voice is finally coming out and people are accepting it, I think I'm really proud of that.
That'd be interesting to see you like, yeah, I've never seen you like provoke. I feel like even if you were to say something that's kind of inflammatory, people wouldn't take you serious because you say everything with like a tongue-in-cheek smile.
Yeah.
So I feel like people would be like, oh, he's just going with a bit somewhere, because you can't really read. That's, I think that's a great thing about you just talking aloud. You can't really read where you're gonna go with the jokes, because you're not like a magician, like, oh, he used a reveal, but you don't know where that bit's going, you know? So you draw the.
Yeah, actually, and people have said that to me, that where it's like they just cannot tell if I'm serious or joking. And it's like that's good. 'Cause it's like it's there's always like a wait, what? Like, does he care about this or does he not? Like, and yeah, it's a little bit difficult because sometimes in stand-up, like people want to put you in a box just so they know like what they're getting and stuff like that. So with me, there is like a little bit of like the audience is always kind of like slightly unsure.
Yeah.
But I'm also not in control of this. I'm not doing anything on purpose. I'm just going up there and talking.
Well, I just from my own observation, it's like this smooth, like jazz ride, because you're never pushing. You're never pushing. I see comics like push on stage, but I never see you rush. I think that's the appeal that I have when I watch your act. Like you're just kind of like this pilot, just like taking them on a ride. Like you're never like trying like get a bit in, and I appreciate that as just a viewer, consumer of comedy.
Yeah, I'm like the ASMR of comedy. I'm just like just laid back. Yeah, I think it's a good I think that's like a sort of a Zen lesson for life. Like you always let people come to you. And it's like, and you can't like it's the same thing, like you can't make someone be your friend. You can't make somebody love you, So it's like you can't make somebody laugh. They have to come to you. So it's almost it's futile to push. So that's why I don't push,
Just wrapping up here, is there anything that you learned that, like, jumping into comedy that you're like, holy shit, like, this is something I did not expect in comedy from doing it past, however long you've done it?
Yeah. I think well, one thing is like I realized the importance of just connecting with people like off stage. Like I used to think that you can just go and be funny and that would be enough, but it most certainly is not. Like so now I'm just enjoying being friends with comedians and like really just getting to know people. It's so funny. Like I think it's just like it's not the funniest comedians that are getting the furthest, it's the people that are the most connected.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hope you're incorrect, because I think you're super funny. And I hope, seriously, I seriously think, man, like a lot of comics are one dimensional, but I totally your face, like I can see you like branching the act if you wanted to. I mean, I think that's also why you're successful, is because you're focused. And I was like, man, this guy's got incredible focus to get good at stand up. So I feel like the world is your oyster. I think.
Yeah, I definitely have a lot of focus. But that's just something that's just in me. I think, it comes from the like, my dad just like standing over me being like, finish, like after the homework is done, like he was like, okay, now you got to do extra homework. Like during, or during the summertime, just making me stay home. And he used to come home from work and he'd be like, okay, show me what you did today. I mean, we're talking, this is like July.
Yeah.
And so I think it's like it's just in me now. I just have like this like crazy focus to just do whatever I need to do.
That's great. Well, Richard, we're wrapping up. We've a minute left, so I'll let you go. But hey, everyone, please check out his stuff. He's hilarious. Instagram, TikTok. If you haven't seen Richard's stuff, watch it. You're not going to regret it. And
Thank
thanks.
you, man. This is a lovely little chat in the morning here.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you doing this, and we'll link up when I'm back in LA.
Yes, let us do that. That'd be great.
All right, thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Tharon. See you soon.